Buddy, welcome to a Tuesday edition Bulldog Hour. Cover us alongside, as always, here until 3 o'clock. Baseball, both stations tonight. The Giants, 6:05, the pre. They will host the Blue Jays tonight, 6:45, first pitch at Oracle Park. And then tomorrow they'll have our time slot because they have an afternoon game as that two-game set wraps up. We've talked about this a lot. Because of interleague play, you have a bunch of two-game series, and this is one of them. The A's are over on 790. Another crushing loss last night. They carried a 4-1 lead into the eighth last night, lost that, and then looked like they were going to win the thing in extras and ended up losing that anyway with two in the bottom of the 10th. Against them, so they will continue on 7:05 first pitch up in Seattle tonight. Bulldog baseball over the weekend against UNLV. And for us tonight, if you have a chance, we're all going to be tuned in to hear what happens with the lottery prior to the Warriors and the Blazers tonight. So if you're tuning into ESPN Radio, you're going to hear what happens with the lottery in Chicago. And as we know, if the Knicks get the pick, everybody screams it was a setup. If they don't, everybody in New York screams they're going to ruin the NBA because the Knicks aren't any good. So there's your backdrop for today. All right. We'll bring up now our good friend, Voice Your Bulldogs, Paul Leppler, nice enough to wait one day to come on with us. Andretti was with us yesterday for our annual visit, and Paul was nice enough to switch locations, and so we will talk to him today and Andrew a little bit later in the week. Paul, how you doing?
Hey, fantastic, Tony, and just really excited that 68 Vietnam veterans got to go see that wall today and that they're coming home tomorrow, and everybody listening has a chance to welcome them home. And glad that that our bosses here at One Putt Broadcasting, again, are so supportive that they're going to have CG out at the airport tomorrow. I'll be out there, of course, and hopefully most of the valley will be there to pack the place and give these veterans that welcome home they didn't get 50 years ago, just like the Grizzlies gave them this weekend.
Yeah, no question. You and I have talked a lot over the years about Honor Flight. Of course, your great work with the organization, and also as we've gone from World War II vets as the primary focus and Korean War veterans to now the Vietnam vets. Not that everybody else isn't still very important, but obviously as we've talked, you're getting to that time where we're removed 50-some years from even the Vietnam War. So it is a very meaningful time. And I was going to mention to you, Paul, that when Mario was with me yesterday, we were talking about his early childhood days, because NBC did a very nice special over the weekend to commemorate his 50th anniversary of winning Indy. And he was talking, since he was born in 1940, that for the first 8 years of his life, Paul, all he knew was war, the war itself, and then the refugee camp that they were in. It reminds you how lucky we are here that we have so many brave men and women that have meant we don't have it on our soil. There are other issues, obviously, terrorism, etc. But, you know, just to hear Mario talking about a family that had everything, Paul, they had everything going, and they had to leave it all behind. It was all taken from them. And actually, the part of Italy that he grew up in is part of Croatia now. So it really is a jarring reminder, isn't it, about our freedom?
Yeah, you hear stories like that. I mean, there's one of the greatest racers of all time. I mean, just here in the Valley, I think people would be surprised to realize how many folks who've impacted us in ways we don't even know went through that, you know, when they were growing up. Maybe it was Italy, maybe it was France. Could have been in any number of places around the world. If you've ever eaten at Luna's in Old Town Clovis, my favorite eggplant parmesan in town. You know, the family that started that and still runs that. I mean, Mrs. Liberta just passed away last year, and the memories she had of growing up in Italy and the human choices that you're confronted with that no one should ever be confronted with. That's what war does to people. That's what our servicemen had to go through, too, especially in Vietnam, where, you know, it was not conventional warfare necessarily, and things that they never should have been confronted with, they had to deal with. And it's things that still trouble them today in so many cases. So to have this opportunity for them to achieve some healing, to share this experience with fellow veterans, and everything else that happens from it, Tony, I know we're getting off on a tangent here, but I was just realizing today we have a lot of local media on the flight this time, being our first all-Vietnam veteran flight.
Right.
And they're all doing a tremendous job, and with social media we can get so many updates. And it hit me that here you have people from all the TV stations in town and different media organizations, but they're all from the Valley. You know, we've got a Fresno State grad and a Reedley College grad and an Exeter High School grad and a Fowler High grad and a Fresno Christian student, and all these people from the Valley are telling stories of vets from the Valley. And how many more is that going to impact as those media folks tell the story now, come back, have a different perspective in the future, and all the stories that are going to be told moving forward? And when you come to one of our welcome homes, as I hope everyone will tomorrow night, you know, we'll start the party a little after 5. The plane should be on the ground by 6, and hopefully you're out of there by 7:30 or 8. But it really is a life-changing experience. The perspective you get, the things you learn, how proud it makes you to be an American and to be from this valley where people get it, where we love our veterans, we understand we wouldn't have our freedom. There are so many things we take for granted, and we have that sacrifice to thank for it. So a chance to celebrate that, to honor them, especially when they weren't treated that way so many years ago.
Yep.
It really is a privilege. It's something, I say it all the time, it gives me goosebumps every time. And if you haven't had that feeling in a while, be out there at the airport tomorrow, and I can pretty much guarantee you will leave thankful that you got to be a part of it.
Paul, best time for folks to arrive as far as the flight itself? I know CG obviously will be on once we finish. Well, actually, after the Giants finish, he'll
right.
be coming on. But for people that want to come out to see the plane coming in, what is the best time to be there?
I always tell people, be there by about 5 o'clock. We'll have the band, Clovis Community Band, will be there playing not long after that. We'll have folks singing. There'll be some high school cheerleaders. The Selma Bear cheerleaders are going to be there tomorrow. If there are some other cheerleading squads that want to be a part of it, let us know. We'll have some cadets from the junior high, and Kerman will be out there decked out, ready to greet the vets. I mean, so many different groups are there because they realize this. So I say get there at 5 or maybe 5:15 to make sure you get a good spot up close. And we'll keep you entertained until that plane lands just a little bit before 6. And as long as there are no issues unloading them, the vets should be marching through, which is the most powerful moment of the whole night. The bagpipes will lead them out. The band is playing their different military branch hymns. And those veterans will be marching through right around 6:30 or so. So I'd say get there a little after 5 and you'll be safe. And the airport's ready to take care of you. They do a phenomenal job. And it's the people of the Valley who make this possible with their generosity, who give the vets their favorite part of the trip every time by that really warm and exhilarating welcome home. So, again, if you've never been a part of it, I know the people who have, they want to be back. But if you've never been a part of it, come join us, see what we're talking about, and see what it means to these veterans and how good you feel about having the chance to shake a veteran's hand and say thank you for serving our country. It means so much to them.
Yeah, no question. And as we move back to sport, which is always that transition, we understand the meaning of sport vis-a-vis the great import of the vets. But as I told you, Paul, I actually old enough that I had to register for the Vietnam draft through Selective Services right at the end of the draft, right as the final peace with honor, if you will, which is a term that probably should not have applied to how things ended there ultimately. But had to actually go ahead and sign on the dotted line and could have, in theory, then been drafted. So this really hits a lot closer to home, the guys of my generation, than my father's war, the Korean War, or World War II for others. So no doubt about it. Also, the one thing I wanted to mention to you when I was talking to Mario yesterday, he was talking about the amazing vineyards he has, the Andretti Estate up in Napa, right by Tom Seaver, by the way. And he was mentioning that his father was a manager of all the family vineyards in Montona, Italy, before they lost it to the war. And he said that the one great regret, his dad did not live long enough to see that Mario was able to get it all back, right, in one of the great places in the world, Napa Valley. And he said it's private conversation he has at night and the serenity there when he's there. Say, you know what, Dad, we got it all back. We got all of it back that we lost back in the 40s. So it's an amazing story, that's for sure. I urge people to check that out online as well. All right, Paul, let's head back to the world of sport, which, like I said, we know its proper place. A couple things I want to ask you about before we get to baseball. One, and I know this is fait accompli, but you and I had the conversation about Arturo Ormond and what was going on with Bryson Williams. And look, I know Arturo. I like Arturo. But, you know, the old me thinketh something stinketh when this whole thing started. anything that you want to add now to the fact that Arturo's on the staff at UTEP? Or are you just saying, hey, you know what, today's another day, or is it, I thought so. Well, what about it?
Well, I think it was a foregone conclusion that that would happen because the, you know, Bryson Williams wagon was hitched very securely to Arturo, or maybe vice versa would be the better way to say that. And, you know, Arturo knows the game. He knows how to develop talent. He has experience at the Division I level. I don't think there's ever a question that is he qualified to be a Division I head coach, but certainly the appearances that come along with that, if you're not using a player as bait to get yourself a job, it certainly has that outward appearance. So only they know. But, you know, it's unfortunate that it becomes a distraction for a player like Bryson when something like that happens because, you know how we feel about Bryson. He's a Fresno guy with a great heart, a really tremendous talent, and I hope he has a monster season out there in El Paso. But, yeah, from the outside, it does look funny. That is part of this sport. You know, there are a lot of coaches who sometimes it was a connection to a certain player, maybe completely above board, that created their first Division I opportunity. In Arturo's case, he's been there before. There were some circumstances here in Fresno that were less than ideal and that created a bit of a firestorm. But, you know, for him to be back in the Division I game, I'm sure he's very excited. And, you know, hopefully for Coach Terry and that staff in UTEP, it's a good fit. And that town gets back to where it needs to be in basketball because El Paso is a great basketball town. Those Miner fans, there's nothing they love more than packing the Haskins Center and watching the Miners win. So if that's what this can help get them back to, more power to them. From a Bulldog perspective, you know, this is what I think was the speculation a year ago. This is what seemed a little untidy and less than perfect, and that's the way it is. So hopefully everything that they've done is by the rules, and there are no further issues, and we don't have to talk about it anymore. But, the way you described it looking is the way I think it looks to everybody, and that does happen in the sport of basketball sometimes, and I think everybody would feel better if it didn't happen quite as much.
You're right about that, and you're also right about UTEP, and we've talked many times. You know, when they were Texas Western, of course, people have seen Glory Road. No, they won the national championship with the first all-African-American starting five back in 1966. And, Paul, I guess the reality of the times, and it's certainly a conversation we've had from then till now, and we're looking at, 53 years, only two what we consider non-Power 5 schools have won it since, Marquette in 77 and Tark and UNLV in 90, and that's a topic for another time, independent of what has happened at UTEP right now. All right, the other thing I want to ask you about before we get to baseball is USA Today saying that Fresno State and SC would be the third most intriguing game of the opening weekend of, and that would be the Labor Day weekend of things, for college football. What about it, Paul? Are you in agreement? And I know it's mainly about the Trojans, but when you look at that list, do you say, yeah, when you line it up, because of the heat Clay Helton is feeling right now, particularly with Urban Meyer sort of making it be known, just maybe he'd like to come back to coaching this time, sunny Southern California. Is this game up in the top of the list in your mind, independent of your relationship to Fresno State, or the fact that you'll call that thing for us?
Well, I think history informs that perspective, right? You know, people here are still basking in the glow of the 1992 Freedom Bowl. And, you know, no one ever talks about what USC's record was or whether the Trojans were any good. Fresno State beat USC, and that was a big, 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 big deal. And in 2005, you know, the Dogs are taking on a college football dynasty that hasn't lost in 3 years, and Fresno State had a fourth quarter lead. And anybody who didn't know about Fresno State football around the country at that point found out about the Bulldogs and Pat Hill and anyone, anytime, anywhere on that evening, November 19th, 2005. Who could forget it? So, you know, when you have those battles in the rearview mirror, and yes, I am conveniently leaving out the last time the Bulldogs went to the Coliseum, but now with Coach Tedford in charge and a team that's been more than competitive and has won 22 games the last 2 years, I think there's an expectation that 2019 will be a lot like 92 and 05, and it'll be a game where Fresno State has every opportunity to prevail.
Is Cam going to call in now and say, Tone, I told you we should run the football, because that was the entirety of the Bulldogs' live after that game, which was, you know what, really should have just run the damn thing. So you're right, Paul.
Brandon Kinnett, where are you?
Yeah, that's exactly right. All right, now, to baseball, and only you can probably unpack this, but I look at the standings, and we've had this conversation over and over again about what, for this year, is a 30-game conference schedule, but they weren't going to make up games. And I look at the clear-cut part of it. We know the Bulldogs are in great shape. They're not only going to make the tourney, but if they can get one in Vegas, they're definitely going to win the league. But, Paul, when you look at the rest of it, take Fresno State and San Diego State and put them in there. Make sense of it beyond that for me, particularly with Air Force. If San Jose State is swept at Air Force, do the Falcons find their way in at break even because everybody else played more games and could be under 500? What about this right now?
Yeah, that's the reality. It goes off winning percentage. So if Air Force is 13-13, which the Falcons would be with a sweep, then they get in before anyone with a sub-500 record. And Nevada finished 14-16. In that scenario, San Jose State would not get in either, and nor would New Mexico. So it would come down to, what Fresno State does against UNLV and where the Rebels finish to determine that fourth spot. But, if Air Force sweeps, the Falcons are in. If San Jose sweeps, the Spartans are in. If anything else happens in that series, Nevada's in. And, it's unfortunate, especially it wasn't just the weather considerations. It's not just the tie, which we've talked about, but the tragedy in Albuquerque that shaved two more games off Air Force's schedule and two from New Mexico. You know, the Lobos may look at it and say, hey, that's what's keeping us from a chance from getting in at this point. Because in theory, if they played those two and won both of those and swept at San Diego State, I realize that's unlikely. But in theory, that may have been enough to give the Lobos a chance to get in. But it's not going to happen. They're not going to make those games up. And, you know, so the Lobos aren't going to go. But everybody else still has at least a possibility of getting in. And, yeah, the Bulldogs only need to win one game to clinch. But if they want to be the team that they have been for the last month, they need to do better than win one. They need to go win the series. Right now, UNLV is the only team in the league that leads the season series against Fresno State. And, you know, if you're trying to build an at-large case just in case something goes wrong in Reno, then winning the series on the road at UNLV, it goes a big step toward that and to getting your RPI in the right place, but also being able to say, hey, we really dominated this league. We won the regular season title, and we won more games than we lost against every team in the league. New Mexico, they ended up splitting the three-game series with us, we've discussed. But, I mean, that would be a strong statement to make. And kind of the goofy thing that it could come down to, if indeed they're relying on an at-large, and I say, okay, that's a secondary consideration, because right now this team, the way it's playing, expects to win every day, and certainly expects to win every series. And they go to Vegas with the expectation of winning, even though they've lost their last four games they've played there in Vegas. And they'll go to Reno the same way. Go there, win the tournament, leave no doubt. And I do. I expect that is what they're going to do if things continue in the direction that they've been heading. But if it doesn't come down to that and you're waiting for an at-large spot, here's where the RPI gets really wonky. And we've talked about, you know, how goofy it is that it's more about what the teams you play do than what you do. And I think that's really reflected in the way they bracket who's a good team, who's not. They talk about top 25 wins, top 50 wins. Well, right now, if you look at the RPI, depending on who's, I'm looking at D1 Baseball's RPI right now, they have Oregon at number 51, San Diego State at number 55. The Bulldogs have 6 wins against those two teams combined. But right now, none of those would count as top 50 wins, even though they're as close to the top 50 as possible. So it's something that arbitrary that could turn into a criteria to either get you in or keep you out. And that's going to shake up a little bit down the stretch, depending on what those two teams do. But there's just an example of how you're really at the mercy of factors outside your control more than what you actually do on the diamond. So if I look at that, I say, well, we better take care of business on the diamond. And I think that's exactly the approach that the Bulldogs are going to take. And if it's anything like what we've seen, like I said, the last month when they've just been a juggernaut, I think that Diamond Dog fans are going to have a chance to keep celebrating. And the fact that they cracked Baseball America's top 25 this week, I think, is another indication that this isn't just smoke and mirrors. It's not a flash in the pan. It's not something where there's a warped view here in the Valley. People around the country see the quality of this team, their ability to win on the road, the consistency. And right now, if you take an up-close look, you cannot miss the senior leadership these Dogs are getting.
You know, Paul, you're right on all counts. The other thing I was going to mention about the strangeness of the standings, because you're not playing an equal amount of games, San Jose State and Air Force play a three-game set starting Thursday, and again Thursday through Saturday as everybody gets ready for the tournament for the four that are going to be eligible for it. They actually could, in theory, knock one another out. I mean, that's the kind of thing that's sort of crazy, isn't it? But if that series falls a certain way, they could actually end up disqualifying one another, and then Nevada sneaks in, which begs the other question. If the Bulldogs, since Nevada is done at 14-16, if the Bulldogs sweep UNLV, which then causes UNLV to fall to 14-16, and let's say San Jose State and San Jose State and Air Force beat one another up, and so they're donezo. Paul, how do the seedings work? How do things work? Do you know who gets what? I mean, could UNLV possibly get chased out of this thing by, say, a Spartan sweep and a Bulldog sweep?
Yes. and the reason is, San Jose, well, and you're right, that they could knock each other out. And if San Jose or Air Force wins the first two, that's exactly what's going to be at stake on that third day. There's also a scenario where there could be a three-way tie between Nevada, UNLV, and San Jose State. And if you're Air Force, there's also the possibility that you could, just like Nevada and possibly UNLV, finish two games under 500, but miss out because of winning percentage, because you didn't play as many games.
Right.
So there are a lot of things that are less than ideal. And I think, you know, we're going to see something similar next year when they play an uneven schedule where half the teams are playing four home series and three road and the other half are playing four road and three home. It's just kind of the nature of the beast. And I wouldn't be shocked if we heard some rumblings of those teams that, you know, have the potential of missing out because of some reason like that, saying, hey, you need to expand the tournament and let a couple more teams in.
Yeah.
But I don't, at this late date, I don't see that happening. I don't think it would be fair to the teams like Fresno State and San Diego State, who have already earned their way in, under the assumption that they had to finish in the top four, to then open it up to six or seven. I think would be less than equitable, given what those teams have already accomplished this year.
Also, as you and I have had the conversation, when they went to four, You know, and Paul, it's an interesting priority. We talked about it in regard to basketball. Well, you know, the pronouncement came down that the ADs were in favor of going to eight and lopping off three teams, making the regular season mean something in basketball. Then, very quickly, that was changed with the thought that you can't market to all 11 schools in Las Vegas if three of them are uncertain they're going to go and you don't know which three. Okay, I thought that was a little bit of a reach, but whatever. But in baseball in particular, if the priority, Paul, is to get your best team or teams into the NC2A, I think you and I are in agreement that it not only makes the regular season mean more to take the top four, but the fact that you are going to directly mimic what happens the following week in the NC2A regionals, I think it's critically important that you keep it in this format. Are you still of that same mind that playing this format of four helps you get ready for the next week where you are playing double elimination with no safety net below you?
Yeah, I think there's something to be said for that. And I think, you know, on the flip side, people say, well, why don't you make it a longer tournament? And I know there was some discussion that next year when it's an eight-team conference for baseball because of Boise State's addition, that they should just have the tournament mimic what you see in Omaha, where there's two teams of, you know, two pods of four teams, and then they'll play a best of three at the end, or even just one game at the end. And I think the argument against that is, well, you tax your pitching staff and your everyday players so greatly that maybe they're not as well positioned to come through in a regional as they would be if it were a four-team tournament. And I think there's something to be said for that. So I think a four-team tournament where you know going in, you have to finish in the top four to have a chance, I think that's pretty fair. Now, there were some extenuating circumstances this year with the number of games people played, and I hope they do address that as far as the parts of that they can control. But, you know, in my mind, it's really a model for what should happen nationally when it comes to the field of 64. I think you can set some rock-solid benchmarks that teams know before the season they're going to have to meet in order to have a chance. And, you know, if teams want to have an automatic qualifier from their conference tournament, great. But how about saying any team that doesn't finish 500 in its conference can't get in to the national championship tournament? Because really, if you can't win half your games in conference, should you have a chance at the national championship and take that chance away from teams that finish well over 500 in their conferences? I would say no. And you know going in. So then it takes some of this subjectivity away from the committee and gives them an objective requirement that must be met for inclusion. And I think that would clean things up a little bit. I think it would make it exciting. And then you don't have as many arguments. You know, if you knew going in, hey, we have to finish 12-12 in the SEC or we can't get in, and you win 11-13, then it was you who cost yourself a chance, not anybody else, not someone on the committee looking unfairly at your resume versus someone else's. So I think that would be a great step in baseball, in basketball, and in any sport that has this kind of tournament format. But we'll see if it ever picks up enough momentum or critical mass to get past the big money opposition.
Well, and that's exactly the issue. You're bound, unfortunately, by logic. You are hampered by the logic of your side vis-a-vis the money of major conferences wanting to see as many of their schools in as possible. The purely self-serving nature of it kind of precludes it. But what you're saying in theory, I think, is absolutely what should happen. Maybe someday it will. The other thing I want to ask you about, twofold, and then we'll get to what happened over the weekend against San Diego State passed. But the concern or lack thereof about Nevada now, since Fresno State went there and swept. And the other thing, and I know it is the fallback, but do you have a level of confidence if the Bulldogs roll this weekend right through UNLV that at-large might be there for them? Your feeling on both fronts?
Well, I think their at-large case right now is pretty strong. Now, if they go and lose a series to UNLV and, you know, don't win the conference tournament, I think that case would be significantly weaker. But if they go and take at least two out of three from UNLV, they can point to the back half of their season and a pretty impressive streak of winning every weekend and getting it done and, you know, having the series edge over every other contender in their conference. You know, head-to-head with San Diego State, they compare well. So, I mean, there would be a lot of things going in their favor. Plus, if they're going to break it down to RPI quadrants, yes, there are some quality wins there for the Bulldogs. And other than the opening weekend of the year and losing to Utah Valley once, there isn't anything hanging on them that says, oh, that's a really bad loss. So since it was opening weekend, I think you can understand that a little bit. And they compare really favorably to other teams in their neighborhood in the RPI, and especially to other West Coast teams. I mean, for instance, UC Irvine, who's a couple spots below the Dogs in the RPI, in some polls ranked ahead of the Dogs. Irvine hasn't won a single game against anybody in the top 50 in the RPI. And the Bulldogs stack up well just about any way you break it down. So I think as far as who they're going to be looked at against and how they compare, right now they look really well. But they need to finish strong. We all remember 2011 and a team that probably was good enough. No, probably about it. Was good enough to host a regional, but got upended, you know, after conference play was over, playing Bakersfield, and didn't play their best. And then that became an excuse and part of the reasoning, the rationale not to let them host. They go to UCLA. They lose a tough game to Irvine and then have to face Trevor Bauer in the next round in a really talented Bruin squad. So that's, you know, that's the way it goes. And thinking about that team and those years, I'm, you know, reminded that Jordan Luplo hit two more bombs today for the Indians. So there's a former Diamond Dog who's killing it. And that's the thing, you know, that I would encourage people, if they haven't checked into Bulldog baseball yet, there are no more home games unless they somehow fall into one in the Super Regionals if they make it that far. But with this weekend in Vegas, the next week in Reno, and hopefully a weekend after that somewhere in California in a regional, go check these guys out, because there are number of players on this team who have major league potential and might be those guys that they're talking about on SportsCenter in a few years. And you don't want to again say, hey, I never knew he went here and I'm sorry I missed him when he was playing for the Diamond Dogs.
Yeah, you're right about that. Now, as far as Nevada goes, any level of concern if the Wolfpack, look, they may, we just talked about the scenario that could bring them to their home field. Would you just soon, from a practical standpoint, not see them, or does it matter at this point?
Well, I think the way the Bulldogs are playing right now, and sorry, I didn't mean to dodge your question.
No, absolutely not.
As confident as they are, maybe they want to have Nevada in there. You know, you don't want the excuse. You don't want to be dodging anyone. That's certainly not the mentality they have right now. But sure, Nevada would be dangerous on its home field. Nevada's been a good team on its home field all year. And what's not clear is, would Nevada have two of its best players back? McLaughlin played this weekend. He didn't play against Fresno State, so it looks like he's going to be okay, and he brings a lot of speed to the table and was their best hitter average-wise all year, and Trum's their big power guy. So if he's ready to make a comeback in a conference tournament on his home field, especially since he's their leading home run hitter and it's an altitude park that favors big power bats, that could be a factor. And I'm sure Nevada would have plenty of confidence, especially as bleak as it looked for the Wolfpack after that Sunday sweep in Reno.
And again, Fresno State could have some say depending upon how things play out in Colorado Springs and what the Bulldogs might be looking at if they were on the precipice of a sweep in Las Vegas. We'll see. We'll know about it when the weekend wraps up. Paul, as far as the weekend passed, I do have to ask you, Jensen looks terrific, and obviously guys like Dempsey continue to tear it up. Aruda had a big day. Tatum's playing terrifically well, but any concern about Davis Moore at all? Was it just one of those things on Saturday?
Yeah, and I thought Mike Batesel said it really well in the postgame show Saturday night. His approach was to tip his cap to San Diego State. The Aztecs came out very aggressive. I'll say it this way, the Aztecs gambled. They took a very aggressive approach, swinging early in counts, starting runners. They even did a hit and run on the first pitch of an at-bat in the first inning. After what had happened Friday with Jensen dominating, the Aztecs showed up Saturday and said, okay, we're holding nothing back. We're not going to play it safe. We're going all in. And they did, and it paid off. And that approach worked against Moore, who was around the zone, who was throwing not bad pitches, but just an aggressive approach by San Diego State, I think, really paid off. I think Davis has been really consistent all year. Against that same Aztec team earlier this year, he was dominant and went 8 scoreless. So they were pretty motivated, I think, to get him. I think you have to be confident in him going into this weekend. And, you know, he still has just one loss on the season attached to his record. So I don't think we should start bailing on the Davis-Moore bandwagon. And I know the scouts aren't. But, you know, that said, UNLV is the team that gives me a little more pause than anybody in the conference. And I'll tell you why. Greg Maddux is their pitching coach. And okay, fine. He's a volunteer pitching coach. Yeah. But Greg Maddux is a Hall of Famer, not because of his arm as much as his mind and the way he understands how it works as a pitcher. And he has really done a great job with his pitching staff at UNLV. And their head coach, Stan Stolte, comes from a pitching background too. So they really pitch well. Ryan Hare, their Saturday starter, could be the conference pitcher of the year. He's been outstanding. Jabara, who they throw on Friday nights, almost threw a no-hitter this year. So those first two guys they have really good stuff and really know how to pitch. And their Sunday guy is Greg's son, Chase, who is just as crafty as his dad and, you know, barely throws hard enough to shatter cellophane, but he really knows what he's doing out there. So they're not going to make a lot of mistakes on the mound. And at the plate, they have a guy who's going to be taken in the top 10, if not the top 5 picks of the draft overall in Bryson Stott, their All-American shortstop. And he sets a powerful tone offensively for them. They have some other power bats around them. And Thursday's game is supposed to be really, really windy in Vegas. So all those things are some factors that say, boy, this is a pretty significant challenge for Fresno State. So I think in a lot of ways, Thursday becomes the biggest game of the year. You have a chance to clinch. You don't want to put that off another day. You don't want to give UNLV hope. But the Rebels are dangerous this week and in the Mountain West tournament, provided they're there. I think that's a team that is the scariest in my mind, just off sheer talent, more so than the Aztecs and Nevada, who will be, you know, great competitors and threats in their own right. But to me, the one that scares me the most is UNLV. And that's me talking, because these Bulldogs certainly aren't scared. They're not playing scared. And those seniors have been unbelievable in this stretch run. Dempsey has just been ridiculous for the last 15 games, and this weekend JT Arruda was just as good, if not better. That's why he's the Mountain West Hitter of the Week. So that that hitting is contagious, not just in a game, but across a series. We're really starting to see that play out, and if they take that same kind of offense to Vegas this week, they're going to be regular season champs before long.
Well, I'll tell you one other note about Greg Maddux. He was, as you know, the king of the comfortable 0-for-4. And there were many, many days in Major League Baseball where opposing hitters walked back to the dugout and said, you know what, I could have hit the guy, I thought I was going to hit the guy, and I ended up 0-for-4. That's what Maddux did to you. Because, like you said, Paul, the stuff didn't blow you away, but his tremendous intellect did, his ability to put the ball where he wanted, to change speeds, change location. And that's the kind of guy that drives you nuts, right? The one where you're sure you could hit him, but you look at your stats and you didn't hit him. And deep down, you know, the next time you compete against him, you probably won't hit him then either. So I hope it doesn't carry over this week or next, which begs the final question. In your very murky crystal ball, because of all the machinations necessary, tell me the matchups we're going to see 1-4 and 2-3 to open things in Reno right now.
Oh, man, if we only knew. Well,
give it a shot.
I'll say, if you're following the trajectory and the momentum, San Jose State has lost 11 straight conference games. It's hard to believe, and so many of those have been one-run games, multiple extra-inning losses. It's just been heartbreak hotel for the Spartans. And, you know, for their sake, you hope they turn that around. And Andrew Mitchell out of Atwater, who's really had a great Spartan career, he'll be pitching Thursday in Colorado Springs, and I wish him the best. But if you look at momentum, and the Spartans' momentum continues, then Air Force should have a chance to sweep. And I think the Falcons have been really good at the start of series. They're pesky enough and resilient enough to hang in there, the Falcons are. And, you know, I could see Air Force getting that sweep. I'm not going to guarantee it, but I could see that happening just the way things are rolling right now. So if that happens, it's going to come down to Nevada and UNLV for that other spot. And in a two-way tie, UNLV actually has the edge. In a three-way tie, the Rebels would be out. So I guess I'll say Fresno 1, San Diego State 2, Air Force 3, UNLV 4. Which would, if it ends up that way, that would make for a real interesting rematch Thursday in Reno to open the tournament. But the Rebels are talented enough to climb into that number 3 spot for sure. Just if Air Force gets the sweep and the dog sweep, that's the way it would look. So this is all hypothetical, Tony, and I'm not guaranteeing anything. But I am confident that these Bulldogs can go to Vegas and get the job done and bring home that regular season Mountain West title.
Well, as you and I talked, as I let you go, my friend, I hope you have a great time at the airport tomorrow with Honor Flight coming in. And, of course, safe trip to Las Vegas. We'll have all three there. You and I both know right now that not only the Bulldogs playing great baseball, which is what you want, but 2008, as we talked, that scenario played out, although the team was kind of sputtering toward the end, where La Tech, as we talked the other day, host school, but they weren't playing in the tournament. So if you want to look back 11 years ago, it might augur well to not have Nevada playing. Though,
no doubt.
I will leave you with this final monkey wrench possibility, okay? What happens if the always problematic weather in Colorado Springs jumps up and we end up with a washout on Saturday? What do you do then if Air Force says, wait, or San Jose State, one of them says, wait a minute, we're not going to be out of here just because we are one game under 500, just like the other guys are one game under 500, but we played less games, therefore our winning percentage, as you know, is slightly lower. What then?
Boy, I sure hope that doesn't happen, Tony. And that would just... It would just give them one extra conversation for the offseason when there's no doubt when the coaches get together, they're going to discuss this. We'll probably see some adjustment moving forward. And I'll bring a full circle for you, Tony. We started out talking about tomorrow at the airport, and thanks for bringing that back up. And here's the connection to Bulldog baseball. Every single game, probably every single game I've ever done at home, I've been able to look out to my right out of our little box, and I see one of the most loyal dugout club members by the name of Mike Gavrilis standing there and cheering. And I never would have known that doctors told that guy 50 years ago when he came back wounded from Vietnam that he's going to have a hard time walking and could never run again. But because of his determination and willpower and God's grace, not only did he do that, did he get back to running, had a great career, has had a tremendous impact on so many ballplayers through his involvement with the Dugout Club. And there's a faithful fan who's been there for the Dogs every day. Here's our chance to be there for him and 67 other Vietnam veterans just like him by being there at the airport tomorrow night.
Look forward to it. Paul, appreciate it, my friend. Have a great weekend. I'll certainly be in touch. Take care.
See you, Tony.
All right, guys. Good friend Paul Leffler again tomorrow. Honor flight. Then an early start to the weekend for Fresno State baseball because they want to wrap things up by Saturday, unless there are weather issues. Now, keep in mind, I bring this up with Paul because the league said we're not going to make up games after the season ends. Now, that becomes a real political hot potato if you happen to have some sort of rain issue on Saturday with that final slot still up for grabs. We'll see. Craig Thompson has a lot of fun in front of him in a variety of sports, particularly his blatant favoritism toward Boise State. Did I say that out loud? I guess I did. All right, we'll take a break. Come back with Stephen Tremblay. I kid. On 50,000 Watt, 940 ESPN. Hi, buddy. Welcome back to 48 here until 3. Giants come up 6:05 tonight, 6:45. First pitch. Blue Jays are in. They'll take our slot tomorrow with an afternoon game. Those games are on 940 over on our sister station to do 790. The A's continue tonight, 6:45, the pre, 7:05 from Seattle, where the A's lost another tough one last night. A's have played good baseball, but they're under 500 because you just can't seem to close the deal. But we know over 162, you certainly have a lot of chances. The Giants have a chance to lose 100 games. The A's have a chance to make the playoffs again. Different story on each side of the bay. By the way, good news for the A's. They're going to build that Retro Stadium. We just know that's going to happen because politics never get in the way in the city of Oakland. All right, I tried. I did my best. All right, guys, chance right now to talk to our good friend Stephen Tremblay, the director of digital media at Fresno State. Stephen, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I've covered that A's stadium stuff going way back, well, maybe 10, 15 years. It's always interesting.
Well, I know we only have a couple of minutes, but I mentioned that Lou Wolf one time was front and center with us about they were going to get it done in Fremont, and I talked to him at 11 o'clock the night before, and he was all excited. 7 o'clock in the morning I had him on. He was depressed. I said, how in the world could you have been? He goes, 6 a.m. meeting, that's how. So that will tell you when you can't even reach 7 a.m. and your hopes are dashed, that's not a good situation. All right, Stephen, I want to ask you, as I look at the schedule to the Mountain West, I see no TV for Fresno State UNLV. What's going on here?
That's a great question, and you should probably ask the folks at UNLV. So,
Is there something else going on?
I mean, I did get it confirmed with the Mountain West that those games were not selected by the host institution to be able to broadcast this weekend. They do not have softball. Their softball team's done. But they've made a decision not to broadcast those. Now, they did also share with me that there is a YouTube page that UNLV has used at times to do a single camera broadcast from the top of their press box. Like a single camera shoot is not the minimum standards for the network. I mean, all of our broadcasts have at least two cameras. So they've told them that you can't just do a single camera with a graphic line across the top that's essentially automated. So there's a chance of that. And if that's the case, it'll be youtube.com/UNLV Athletics is the way that you could potentially have a bird's eye view from the top of the press box.
Good enough. All right, softball-wise, team like the baseball team headed up north, what about this first round? If there is a second round for Fresno State, what about
it's a required element for host institutions as part of the National Invitational Softball Championship to have a stream of their broadcasts. Some schools can do pay, some schools can do free. With Nevada being a Mountain West networks or Mountain West school with the Mountain West network, their baseball team is off this weekend, so it works out really nice for them on that end where they can still do their game tonight but then do the entire tournament. All of those games So Fresno State's first game on Thursday at 1 o'clock, and then the entire – and it's not just Nevada games. Every single game is required by Triple Crown Sports, as is Triple Crown Sports will take care of the broadcast right. from out in Fort Collins at their sports complex.
Which is the next week if you advance. And as I mentioned,
yep.
so the softball team heading to Reno this weekend, the baseball team the following week. So both postseason play in different tournaments. And then finally, anything else going on golf-wise? Anything else that we need to know about, Stephen?
Alex Lee finishing up today. I have not seen his scores, but definitely check out at FS Athletics and Fresno State Golf on Twitter. That's Fresno State M Golf.
Good enough. Stephen, appreciate the time as always. Have a great one. I'll talk to you next week. Take care.
Have a great week, Tony.
Sure. All right, guys. Stephen Trembley. We'll take a break, come back, wrap things up, get you ready for baseball later on tonight on both stations on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN.